on January. Interview with Bob Hughes by Leanne Brown on January 30th.
Okay, what is your full name?
Robert Lee Hughes, Jr. H-U-G-H-E-S, as in Howard, no relation.
Junior? How old are you now?
57.
Where do you live?
Dodge City, Kansas.
What's the first thing you heard about Vietnam?
Well, in the 60s, everybody knew about Vietnam because after Kennedy was killed, we became involved in the Vietnamese problem. Everybody in the classes from all about 62 through 72 knew they were going to be drafted.
How did you feel about the war in the beginning?
The war itself, we all thought in the early 60s was righteous, stop the communists. Class of 65, we all knew we were going to go to Vietnam, just a question of when.
Did you enlist or were you drafted?
I enlisted. I dodged the draft. I'm getting such a big hurry. It's that big a deal.
What branch of the armed forces did you serve in?
I was a Marine.
Where did you receive your training?
San Diego, MCRD. That's Marine Recruit Depot.
MCRD.
Okay. Hollywood Marines would call us in those days. You were went through boot camp in North Carolina. You were a swamp jockey if you were in Hollywood, California.
Okay. What rank did you achieve?
I came out of the Marine Corps as a Sergeant E5.
How old were you when you first went to Vietnam?
When I went to Vietnam?
Yeah.
I was 20.
What was your first impression of Vietnam when you landed?
Stunk. The reason I say that is that they had a habit of open-air markets. The Americans had an open-air habit of burning what we call the outhouses, latrines. Pitch 5-gallon drums full of, cut in half full of diesel. After everybody went to the bathroom and then periodically cut them out and burned them. That's kind of a nasty detail.
Where in Vietnam were you stationed?
I-Corps covered the northern province from the Demilitarized Zone, or the DMZ, down to Da Nang and a little south of Da Nang, where it went to the 2 Corps.
I hope that gets back.
Da Nang, D-A-N-A-N-G, hyphenated, or okay, separated. D-A, space, N-A-N-G. Da Nang was a provincial city of that particular area.
What was it like being in the jungle?
It's very beautiful. Very quiet. And very deadly.
Did you go on night patrols?
Day patrols, night patrols.
Hey, yes. How are they?
General rule of thumb was over there, if you lasted 3 or 4 months over there on the patrols without getting killed, you'd probably make it to the last month you were there. Until you learned how to be a better Indian than they were, it was pretty scary. Once you found out they were not the masters of the night, you could beat them for your own game.
Describe a typical day there.
Typical day? Yeah, I hope there's such a thing. There's always something going on. Typical day. You'd get up pre-dawn. Get up, go down to the mess hall, eat, come back. If you had a mission scheduled that day, then you shave and get your gear ready and your briefing. And then wait till your departure time, which could be delayed a great deal of time because of weather, helicopters. If you didn't have a mission that day, then it was just go up, do your normal jobs that you had back in the base area. And
what were some of the normal jobs?
I was an engineer. I ran generators, I built power lines. If I was on a day watch, then I'd make sure my generators were ready to go or going and service them. If I was on night watch, then I didn't do anything until the night shift.
Did you operate any machinery?
Yep. Generators, front end loaders.
Huh?
Well, that's counting the stuff we were supposed to do. We had a lot of stuff that we could midnight requisition, like a D2 cat.
And then,
yeah, it's a Caterpillar. It's a bulldozer.
Once you were over there, did your feelings change about the war?
Actually, I went over the attitude that I was there to prove myself. That I was capable of combat, capable of doing the job I was trained to do. It wasn't about pacification or Vietnamization or preventing communism. It was about straight up combat, man to man.
How'd you feel about the enemy?
Somebody to kill. Kill them before they kill you. Until they kill your first one. Until you kill your first one. One thing to think about doing your job in combat, when you actually kill someone. Killing's easy. That's the easiest thing in the world. Living with it afterwards. Be a bit of a bite. You see his face. You remember his scream. And even though he's trying to kill you, you remember that the rest of your life.
What did you do for fun over there?
Fun?
Yeah. Was there any
drunk?
Kind of
parties and got drunk.
Okay. Did you have any friends that were wounded or killed?
26 of us went over. 12 came back. There's still 9 of us we get to get together. Reunions every so often. One went into the swamps of Florida and has never come out. We've never been able to get him out. One rides a motorcycle all over the United States and all the world, as far as I know. You only see him when he shows up on the front porch. Stay a couple weeks, then he's gone. And the coward of the outfit we never talked to. He was out in Seattle.
He was where?
Seattle, Washington.
Okay.
We don't have anything to do with him. We lost one of our 9 4 years ago. He died of a heart attack.
What know about mail and letter or something?
Five of us made his funeral.
Did you hear any news from the U.S. about protesters?
Yeah, we'd hear, not so much on the Armed Forces radio, but we'd hear from the guys that rotated out before us about the crap that was going on. I had no clue as how vicious it was until I came home.
Did you feel that the protesters had something to protest about, or do you think they're in the right place when they're doing it?
Well, it's one thing to protest the war. I had no problem with protesting the war, but they were protesting the wrong people. They were taking kids like me, not kids, I was what, 21 when I came home. We've done our job, we've been over there, and they came in. And I started going after the politicians, they went after the troops. When we landed in San Francisco, they wouldn't let us off the plane because of the protest. So they loaded us up, flew us from Frisco to Norton Air Force Base, just outside of LA. We went through deprocessing and all the good noise. We bused us to LA, X Airport. Got off there. Hell, they had people there. And no amount of people tell them about being called a baby killer, spitting, throwing blood at us, prepared me for what happened. I just couldn't believe it. What the hell's wrong with these people? And instead of trying to understand them, you have to understand after you're in combat.
That's right across the street. I have a belt right across the street.
They call it the thin red line. You balance on a line, sanity, insanity. You fall off one side in insanity, you lose all control, you just take lives because you want to. Stay on the sane side and you use some sort of judgment. But the thing is, you don't understand. You develop senses. Everybody's got eyes, but they don't use them. Everybody's got ears, but they don't use them. They got a sense of smell, they don't use them. In the jungle, you can smell a man a couple hundred yards away. You can smell his fear, for one thing. You can smell the kind of food he eats. You can tell if an American or a Vietnamese over there by the food he eats, just by the smell. You can smell the tobacco. We learned early on not to smoke in the jungle because you can smell the cigarette smoke. You can tell whether it was a Vietnamese cigarette or American cigarette. We all learned to chew, whether it was Copenhagen Skoll. I personally chew what's called Red Leaf. It's made in Canada, plug tobacco. But those senses, those things, I mean, your eyes, you could scan a jungle wall and pick out a man's face in the jungle because the Vietnamese didn't camouflage the face like as we did later. You could look out there and just scan the whole thing, you see a man's face. You could smell him. You could smell the fear. You know, fear has a smell and a taste all its own. Unless you've been there, you don't know. But we call it the thin red line. And that's the line you walk day in and day out for 13 months. When you come home, you just couldn't get off that line. You just couldn't quit. And I don't know if you ever heard of post-traumatic syndrome. It doesn't show its head for a number of months. 30 or 40 symptoms, but there's the 12 that are most deadly or most effective. It's really scary when you finally sit there and you figure out, hey, I'm one of them guys. You deny it right up to the last split second. It's not me. I don't fly off the handle. I don't have anger. I don't explode. I'm not violent. There you are. You're hostile. You're violent. You're not the person that went over years ago. Same guy. Kids coming home from Iraq are in the same thing. They go over there, they get in the war, they come home. Most of the kids over there now are coming back to their reservists. They're coming home to families. And the families don't understand, well, why didn't it go back like it was? Well, it can't go back like it was because he can't go back like it was, or she can't. And the military now involves men and women. It's an extremely excruciating thing to put somebody in combat and bring back and say, okay, Now you got to go back to being a good citizen. You can't do that. You just can't shut it off. My oldest daughter was born before I quit sleeping with a pistol underneath my pillow. It's just, you just don't shut war off. If you become a soldier, don't shut war off. It stays with you. Here I am, 40 years later, and I'm still the same way. I still have the attitude that I'm a lot slower, a lot older, and I don't catch it, but I still have the same attitude. I'm always watching. I don't carry a gun with me all the time like I used to, but comes with old age.
Okay. Did you get letters?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I got letters from my family. I had a fiance, but she dear-johned me while I was there. But we had a bunch of school kids that wrote us letters. Young teenagers wrote us letters. And I made it a point when I got out to go see each and every one of them. There were three of them. And visited them and talked to them and thanked them. Really neat kids, but they didn't have a clue. I mean, I tried to explain to them that what they were doing did a lot to keep our sanity, but they didn't have a clue what it was all about. They were just writing some GI. Young girl from Maine. There's a girl from Colorado, and a girl from Iowa.
How'd the letters make you feel?
It was contact with somebody who was closely involved, what was going on. They really didn't know me. We got to know each other pretty well. And sometimes you write them a letter back, totally defunded them. I mean, they didn't understand what they were. You come back from a tough mission and you just babbled in a letter. They'd always write you back, and it was soothing, really soothing. Contact with home was extremely important. Even these kids that weren't even family or anything, just, I mean, you didn't know them other than through the letter. Contact was extremely important.
When you came back, how did the people treat you?
Oh, it varied. Sometimes you'd receive people that you knew would come back, oh, God, you're back, you made it safe, glad to have you back. And there were those that sit there and look at you like, you know, you are a real freak. And we were different classes. I don't say people, we lived by a different code.
Mary told me to bring you that.
Thank you. It varied, like I say. You'd run into some people that just, they found out you were a Vietnam veteran, you'd been over there, and they didn't want to be anywhere near you. You had diseases, you were crazy. There were other people that, especially the old-time veterans and families of old-time World War II career veterans, they were a lot better. But you got a little leery of people, especially the news media, that wanted to interview because of, in that particular time, they had the Dan Rather syndrome. We're going to make history. We're going to make a Pulitzer Prize story by showing this guy who went out and murdered people. And I had some really good friends. They weren't all in the Marines. I had a class of 631 people in my high school class of 65. Best of my knowledge, 227 men served in Vietnam. I went to class reunion, 35th year reunion. Not one of us got killed over there. But we all came back different people. I know of only one individual that stayed married to the same woman after he went over and came back. One out of all those people. Marriages were extremely fragile with a combat veteran. And I only know of two men who stayed married after they came back. Myself being one of them, God bless her, she took a lot of crap off me. And another friend of mine. All the rest of them been married, divorced, at least twice.
After the war was over, did you feel that I was right? Or did you feel
no, mistaken? I was anti-war as I came. The government made every attempt they could not to win that war because it was politically inconvenient. That war could have been won if they just fought it like they should have. They didn't do it. They wanted to prolong it, keep it going. Number one, to keep the economy going. Number two, they want to make the Russians mad because it might lead to a nuclear war. Bullshit. The reason I didn't stay in the Marine Corps is because I didn't want to be sent back there. I had an opportunity to ship over, had an opportunity to go to reserves. I wasn't going back to that hellhole. Not the way I'm here. Particularly mentally, I was attuned to being a Marine, and I wanted to be a Marine, and I was a good Marine. I wasn't going back to that goddamn party. Like I said, you get these voices that talk to you after it, and after a while you kind of learn to live with them, and you learn to talk to them, and you make peace with them. But boy, the first 20, 25 years of the sun. Drank so you could sleep, and you didn't sleep for shit when you didn't drink. I came close to shooting my mom when I got home because I told her. You don't want to wake me up, you just come to the door and you say something. Don't come downstairs, don't do anything, just say something. I'll be awake, I sleep that light. Now, mom didn't pay any attention. She come barging through the door and I got down. The only reason I didn't kill her is I pulled the shot off. That bothered me the day she died. It bothered me today. And she knew better. She was a Navy wife, she knew better.
Have you ever had flashbacks?
Yes.
What did you learn about yourself over there?
Well, when I graduated from boot camp, my platoon commander said, now you have graduated from Marine boot camp. You can be anything you want to be if you put your mind to it. What I learned in Vietnam is, I don't know, be anything I want to be, but now, I've done everything in the world that makes me sick. But I will survive and I will live. What I learned over there is that man does not live by everything they put out in the news media. He is a very vicious, nasty animal. I always complain about the atrocities of World War II, the Germans, the Japanese. That's just humankind. Man in war is nasty. Unfortunately, war is one of those things you can't get away from. Wouldn't trade $1 million for what I did. I wouldn't take $1 million to do it again. I believe I'm a better man and person for what I went through. And I hope that somewhere, somehow, I influence kids to understand that. You have to fight for what you believe in. Sometimes it really sucks to lose something. The way the world is. I always believe that, and I learned it over there, it's your turn to die, it's your turn. If you've done what you're supposed to do on this world, you have a purpose. What I believe. You have a purpose in this world. When that purpose is done, then you're done. You're hit not 1 second before, 1 second after. When that job is done, then you're history. God's going to take you back. Till then, you'll live. Walk out of a bunker one morning and the mortar hits in front of you. The guy on your right side takes it through the face and head, kills him, and you get nothing. There's got to be a reason. That was a little place called Quezon.
What?
That was a little place called Quezon. Yeah, I got to go to exotic places. I went to Way City during the siege. Quezon during the siege. Tonkin. Went into Laos for a while when we weren't supposed to be there. That's where I got shot.
Where'd you get shot at?
I shot the knee. Because we weren't supposed to be there. So you never got shot.
At all?
Unless you get more questions.
Well, I'm out of questions. I'm out of questions.
You're out of questions? And I reckon I'm out of answers.
Okay.
Kind of, sort of.
All right.